The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com. Training camps are here, football is back, and the Pick 6 NFL podcast will be with you all preseason, just like they've been in your podcast inbox every day throughout the offseason. Join host Will Brinson daily to catch up on the latest from around the league with an added fantasy and gambling twist. Make sure that you're ready for the 2019 NFL season and download and subscribe to the Pick 6 podcast anywhere podcasts are found.
Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between, CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Barton Simmons. I'm Chip Patterson, and we are wrapping up the ACC's time here in our Win Totals preseason series. Award-winning Win Totals preseason series. Thank you so much for all the listeners and the subscribers who continue to consume this content with a fervor unknown to mankind. Barton, I've been checking up on the stats, and I'm very pleased. And the hunger is continuing to build as we work our way towards, you know, the Big Ten next week, the SEC the following week, win totals locks coming up. We got so much of a breakdown of all of our different ballots that we're gonna have to turn in. I mean, we are getting the good stuff now, and then the real fighting and debating, I feel like, is in our near future.
That's the best part. So our numbers are good, huh? The people are listening?
The people have been enjoying it. I got to say, shout out to all of the... And we talked about this on the last podcast, and we were addressing the Pat Fitzgerald, you know, the other side of it being how awesome it is that someone could be in Minnesota and really care about Georgia, or in Nashville and be really into Washington. And like, when I'm looking at the consumers of the Pac-12 shows, the Big 12 shows, I mean, it's, I feel like our audience is right there with us. They are as hardcore as our these two humble hosts that you hear on the podcast.
You know what? Like minds. You know, we're building a culture. Or this is, what is this, year three of the podcast?
Yeah, it's year three. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is when it starts to click. You know, this is when Dino Babers hit 10 wins. This is about damn time.
The light, Dino Babers always said the light comes on about midway through year two, and then and then the big jump comes in year three. So yeah, I think that's what we're experiencing right now.
We've recruited all of our own players at this point. All of our, you know, we're not no leftovers from the previous podcast regime. We're ready to go.
As we were looking at the Pac-12 media days that came through, a quick item I want to hit before we get into the win totals. Larry Scott indicating that the Pac-12 is considering a 9 a.m. Pacific time kickoffs. Now, there's a couple different ways to cut into this, but the initial media premise, the way that I understand it, is that you would also be contributing to what is a movement to make the noon slate a thing. Fox is trying to make the noon slate a thing, offering one of the premier Big Ten or Big 12 games right there in that noon slot after their new pregame show, which will feature Urban Meyer as well as others. So, you know, as the Pac-12 is considering its own move to the noon Eastern time window, again, 9 a.m. Pacific time, I believe Colorado would actually have the, you know, the 10 a.m. in the Mountain time. What were some of your initial reactions to this? Because I think there's the player side, there's the coach's side, there is the conference itself. How much stake are you putting into this announcement, which did seem to resonate and reverberate throughout the college football community?
I must have just been, you know, hunkered down in rankings talk because I missed that. And that sounds, I mean, whatever, it's great as a consumer, it's fine, I'm sort of indifferent, sure, I'll catch an 11 a.m. Central Time Pac-12 North matchup, I guess. Like, I don't know what the reason for it is, but I can tell you this, as you said that, my reaction to it is, as a player, oh my God, that sounds terrible. Like, you know how early those guys got to get up to get their pregame meal in? And I mean, I played in noon kickoffs every week when I was in school, and I hated it. Like, I mean, it was just reality, so I didn't have much choice. But I'm just saying, when you compare that to a nighttime kick where you have sort of all day to get your mind right, and you just sort of you build up for that evening. Whereas in those morning kickoffs, you're kind of getting the sleep out of your eyes by 11 a.m. And I mean, and I tell you who else is going to like that, though, is coaches love that, because then they get all evening to hang with their family, which they don't get to do at all during the season. So if I'm a player, I am throwing up a big X for that just because I got to get up at 6 a.m.
No,
5 a.m.
Yeah,
don't know.
I was going to say 4:30. Like, 4:30, looking at what stadiums normally open about 4 hours before kickoff. That means stadium staff has to be in place by 5 a.m. And if you're driving in, like if you don't live in that college town, then you're maybe driving in. You're getting up at 3:30 in the morning. Now,
yeah, the fan experience sucks, right? I mean, who wants to go to a sporting event at 9 in the morning?
Well,
I don't know.
There is a sporting event or a type of sporting events that do happen around that time, and came to me as I said, oh, so the Pac-12 just wants to host a bunch of rec league soccer games where the dads are all out there with their coffee and the kids have just been rolled out of bed. Their uniforms were thrown on them. There's going to be all the donuts and it'll be like a little breakfast bar. I mean, I was like, this just sounds like rec league soccer with a little like 9 a.m. kickoff time. And there are a lot of youth sports that start at 9, and you know, college football players are used to early morning workouts. You know, there's a lot. So here's the argument. Chip Kelly was one of the coaches who did actually speak out saying that they would be interested in participating in this. And Chip Kelly said, he mentioned the other side of it. He said, for the players to sit around all day for a 7 p.m. local time kickoff, which is that, you know, 10 p.m. Eastern time. That's about when, you know, the Pac-12 network drops one around 10. Normally ESPN or ESPN2 will get a 10:30 in there. It's like where you bridge after the 8 p.m. Eastern time window is done. You're getting yourself over. It's about second quarter in the Pac-12 games. And Chip Kelly was presenting the view that to have to sit around all day on Saturday waiting for that 7 p.m. kick, so many players, again, this is his view of it, players would rather just, you know, get the game over with. And I sympathize with that.
That's such a Pac-12 mentality, man.
Like, how so?
Because
elaborate.
Because what's the – I mean, the beauty of these night games is this sort of intense, raucous atmosphere that you're walking into this this arena of competition, whereas, you know, the alternative is, man, let's just get it over with. And I've heard, I mean, I've heard that perspective too from players. And you know, and again, in college, I didn't play night games. And so I never felt that anticipation all game. I always say, like, my least favorite part of every game was the national anthem, because I hated just standing still while the national anthem played for 2.5 minutes or whatever it was, like waiting for kickoff. So I do understand that anticipation, but the idea that let's just get the game over with, I think it's very
Pac-12.
It's hard for me to envision myself having that mentality. Like, I think the build up to grow to this sort of event is what's fun about it.
I think that might be the key operating phrase. The Pac-12 is looking at a college football game and saying, let's just get it over with. Let's get these kids showered and back to the dorms. Let's go.
But like I said, the coaches, the I mean, I totally get the coaches' perspective, because for, you know, when they're working 16-hour days all week and they can't see their family, like Saturday is actually a day when they do get some time. So they hate those Saturday night games, because then, you know, you got to be sort of team activities all day long to occupy the players, and then you don't get home until 2 a.m. or whatever. Whereas the alternative is get the game over with by 1 in the afternoon, and then that's that rare occasion where you have all day with your family. And so I certainly get that, and I don't begrudge them that, but that to me is a coach perspective, not a player perspective, but I could be wrong.
I think that Pac-12 schools would probably prefer to play at noon. And the problem, if you're trying to maximize the national TV window, is that if you're playing at noon locally, you're going right up against just a swath of action in that 3 o'clock, 3:30 window over in the East Coast and in Central Time.
Well, it's funny that they're doing this to try to, I guess, get more visibility.
Well, they're exploring it. They're exploring it. Yeah.
Right. But you informed me about this because presumably you paid some attention to their media day, which just totally wasn't even on my radar. Like, I just forgot they were having it. Well, like last week I was dialed into all the other media days, and then this week it's just Pac-12. I didn't even know what was going on.
Utah was picked to win.
Yeah.
Would they have? I think they had Utah and Oregon as their division winners.
Yeah.
That's going a little too against the. There've been some preseason polls that have gone a little bit too much against the grain for my liking.
Who would you expect it to have been picked?
Washington.
No, I know, but in the South.
No, Utah being picked there is fine.
You're saying pick to win the whole thing?
Correct.
I got you.
That was the, okay, all right, okay. We'll see.
That's another one, man. I picked them to win the Pac-12, or I am, at 11-1.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got them at 10-2, 11-1.
But I don't know, man. Like, now that everybody else is, maybe I got to recalibrate. I don't want to be just part of the herd. But yeah, I think they're going to be pretty good.
All right. You ready for it?
Yeah, hit it. As much as I think it's the under is a safe play, like, I can't even.
Count them up. How many games are going to win this fall?
I can't fathom who wins.
How many games are going to win this fall?
I just can't. I don't see it. It's not on there.
It's not
the schedule I'm looking at. Unless there's another schedule somewhere.
So the ACC's Atlantic Division conversation absolutely starts with the four-time consecutively ACC champion Clemson Tigers, heavily favored with 1-6 odds in Vegas to win the league. They got all but three of the votes to win the league at the media days, as I mentioned on the last podcast. And the win total here is reflective of that just sort of overwhelming nature of trying to consider Clemson and the fact of whether or not they might even lose at any point. An over-under win total right now set at 11.5. Barton. That they went 15-0 last year. It is so hard to play high-level college football time and time again and always end up on the right side of all of the breaks, whether they're lucky breaks or whether they're breaks that came because of the way that you prepared and the way that you executed. Are you willing to take that big step and say, nah, 12-0?
Let me pose this question back to you. What is the argument against 12-0? Like, what are the circumstances and the mental approach and roster weaknesses on this team that lead to a one or two loss season?
The Clemson defense is uniquely loaded up on the back end, where previous years you have looked at that part of their defense as somewhere where you could go and get them a little bit. You know, Kellen Mond lit him up for a whole bunch of yards as he was trying to storm Texas A&M back in College Station a year ago. Like, I think Nathan Peterman, you know, had Pittsburgh rolling in Death Valley in a game that Pitt went on to win. You know, I think that when you're flipping it on the other side and you're saying, okay, you know, whether it's Kayvon Wallace, Tanner Muse, AJ Terrell, like they've got some dudes on the back end of that defense. And while they have recruited well, and you know, you've got sort of like a budding potential star in Xavier Thomas, I think that the absence of those certainties on the defensive line, that is what you circle if you're talking about the depth chart. And then the evidence to suggest otherwise is two items. One of them I just mentioned: Pittsburgh beating Clemson at home, a Clemson team that went on to win the national championship with Deshaun Watson, and then Syracuse beating Clemson on the road. That team did not go on to win the national championship, but it did go on to win the ACC. So the idea being, Clemson teams that have achieved the greatest of achievements, for the most part, are not totally invincible. 15-0 a year ago, yes, but there have been too many opportunities that were near losses, and there have been too many games where, or there have been those games where they lose to ACC opponents that they were heavily favored against, and you just play the odds. And you look up and down the schedule and you say, yeah, I could see them winning. I could see them losing one of those games.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, the defensive line, I'm not worried at all about their edge presence. They, you know, Xavier Thomas will be probably as good as any of those guys that just left, frankly. They've got a bunch of other 4- and 5-star guys teed up. Excuse me, I'll just hit the mic here. Teed up to go. But defensive interior, I'm not sure that they can just seamlessly replace Christian Wilkins
and Dexter Lawrence.
You know, yeah. I mean, that's pretty meaningful and significant. But I think their offense is probably, this is probably going to be Clemson's best offense that they've ever fielded. I mean, if Trevor Lawrence is just like a shadow of what we seem to have decided he is. Travis Etienne is, we know what he is. I don't think there's any question what he is. Justin Ross is their best receiver, and T. Higgins is going to go in the first or second round next year. There's so much talent at the skill positions. Their offensive line returns, 3 starters and has a 5-star stepping in as the potential, you know, Mitch Hyatt backfill. So offensively, there's just, I have zero questions. And the back seven is, I really have zero questions either. And defensive line, I'm not concerned, but there's, you know, you can bring up some areas where they gotta, you know, have a new face emerge. But so all that to say, like, I'm not going to put, this won't be a lock, but I'm more comfortable with 12-0 than 11-1. But A&M at Syracuse, you know, I don't know, at NC State maybe. I mean, there's just no, I think those first three games, like the A&M and Syracuse games, like if they go 3-0, then it's, I feel like you're going to feel pretty good about your overpick.
Clemson is potentially in that point too, where Clemson's biggest enemy might be Clemson. Like, we can't ignore, like, we can,
right.
We can shower Dabo Swinney and the culture and the mindset and everything that he does to bring that group together and get them on the same page and maintain focus. But I'm just, I am not putting it past Clemson to show up and have a bad game. And, you know, so there was, Clemson's all over the preseason All-ACC team, and one of the conversation points was like, would an All-ACC team minus Clemson beat Clemson? And one of the more thoughtful responses to that was probably not, but maybe, but the score would be in the 40s. Like, you'd have to set the over-under. Like, everyone seems to agree no one on that schedule is stopping Clemson, but if Clemson stops Clemson, are they elite enough on the defensive line in other areas where you know, that unit is going to be able to carry the way? Because, man, like, even Dabo himself heading into you know, last season and the season before that talked about, you know, the strength of our, you know, we had our Taj Boyd, our Sammy Watkins, our Nuke Hopkins, but the strength of this team, it's in the trenches. It's the offensive and defensive line, and we're going to win games that way. And it kind of feels like we're back to that. It's almost like when Chad Morris first sort of uncorked his offense as the offensive coordinator for the Tigers. It's like, man, if you're going to beat Clemson, you just got to be ready to put 40 points on the board, because I don't see anyone that's going to stop for four quarters Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne, Justin Ross, and T. Higgins from finding the end zone.
And I think I did see some of that floating around, you know, who wins All-ACC or Clemson. And I can't help, as you're saying that, to think about, all right, like, this is the first exercise in uber hype.
Oh yeah, yes.
For this team, and when have we seen this before? Well, USC versus Texas, the build up to that, all we were talking about was like the bracket for like USC. You know, I'm talking the USC team that lost to Vince Young. You know, the build up for that was like Kirk Herbstreit like breaking down these hypothetical games between the all time great football teams in college football history, and then they go and lose to Texas. And then last year, can Alabama beat an NFL team? And then they go and lose to Clemson. And, you know, if this if we're already having these sort of exercises with Clemson, then there is certainly like precedent that they're going to trip up at some point, just based on the nature of kind of the mental psyche of college kids.
It's really easy to feel good about yourself when everyone around you is reinforcing that idea. Really easy. Coming up next, we are taking a look at the NC State Wolfpack. We'll get into them and the rest of the Atlantic Division next.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Dave Doran's NC State Wolfpack win total set at 7.5. At the risk of, this is the perfect number because I feel like we both have settled into that familiar talking point that it is a compliment, but also suggests that we believe there is a ceiling to think that any NC State season, no matter what the personnel is, if we are here in the Dave Doran era, yeah, it's probably a 7 or 8 win team. So here we are right at 7-5. Barton is at a 7 or 8 win team.
This, the ACC, and maybe even specifically the ACC Atlantic, is like the, and I don't know if you tell me, you might not feel this way because you're kind of an ACC country. But to me, this is like the most anonymous conference in college football. It's like this, you know, NC State's just going to roll out a bunch of tough front seven guys and they'll have some big receiver and a pretty good run game, and that's them. And they'll be in this 7 or 8 win territory. And Boston College is going to be this really physical run game, and they're going to finish 7-5. And then there's Wake Forest that's going to be a steady improvement year over year, Dave Clawson, but you don't really know who any of their stars are. And they're going to be 7-5. And then there's, you know, it's just like all these teams are just, they're just sort of these kind of anonymous teams that fluctuate between 9 and 6 wins. And so NC State, I think, is, and particularly this year, even more so than the last few, I think is kind of falls into that. And I'm concerned about the quarterback position. I'm not concerned about the running back position, where Ricky Person is I think really good. You know, I think that they defensively are probably going to be pretty good. I mean, I know their linebackers are really good, even though they lose Jermaine Pratt. I'm on the under at 7-5, but it's just there's some Syracuse, BC, Wake Forest type toss ups in there that could flip this thing pretty easily. And so I don't know how you confidently decide which of that group is better than the next.
I think that the anonymity, and to say anonymous, is very telling for the general perception of the league, because NC State probably would be occupying this same territory. Boston College should be happy to, not should be happy, but Boston College is happy to occupy that territory. And it is the absence of a Virginia Tech, which ran off nothing but double-digit win seasons from 2004 to 2011, and Miami and Florida State, from feeling like you've got just some like that. That is not anonymous. The ACC is no longer anonymous if Clemson is winning 12 games, but then it's Virginia Tech, Miami, and Florida State all winning 9 or 10, and then your NC State and your Boston College is winning 7 or 8. It's the fact that Florida State and Virginia Tech and Miami have slid back into that sort of 7-9 win, you know, mess, that bubble, that bloated middle, that probably brings the feeling like it is anonymous.
Yes.
I don't think that unless like major changes happen, you're looking at NC State as a team that we should be putting a 9.5 win total on, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and they just lost this quarterback that was had for 2 years been talked about as a first round draft candidate and was sort of this steady Eddie guy back there. And I mean, they've lost some pretty good playmakers at receiver too. And I mean, I just think they've got to really, I mean, just where is their breakthrough? Like, where is their,
The breakthrough year already came and went without an ACC championship.
And this year they got to do it replacing an offensive line coach who's really good. They got to replace a offensive coordinator who's got a head coaching job. They've got to replace a co-defensive coordinator who got a D coordinator job. You know, it's just, I think there'll be a tough out for people, but I don't think this is now, like, this isn't the time, I don't think, to throw your chips down on NC State. Maybe that's next year, but I feel like 7-5 is about right this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm taking the under on this one. I think 7-5 is about right, but I will reiterate that, and you talk about this a lot. The reason why Dave Doran is still at NC State and the reason why he has established a level of consistency that has them not really dropping off. You know, it is 7, 8, 9 wins pretty much every year. I mean, year 7 for Dave Doran. The reason why it's working is because they've got an elite strength and conditioning program that has produced NFL players year over year. I mean, Jermaine Pratt was not, when he showed up at NC State, that was not someone, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, that's not somebody who people are like, that is going to be an NFL player. You know,
Safety. He came there as a safety.
Bradbury on the offensive line.
Came there as a tight end.
Yeah. It's just the strength and conditioning program at NC State led by D'Antonio Burnett, who played for NC State, is elite. And because of that, I don't need to know the names. I just know they're going to be good and they're going to be tough.
I think that's important just to clarify too. Like, being an anonymous team isn't always bad. In some ways, they just roll out the next guy that's been adding 15 pounds of mass every year for the past 3 years, and now it's his turn to be a bully. Like, it's just sort of, like, it's not always a negative to be anonymous. And in this case, it's. We're kind of putting a ceiling on them to a degree because we don't have expectations that they have 11-1 seasons, but we also are putting a pretty high floor.
Agree.
Count them up!
Florida State, next up in our ACC Atlantic win totals analysis, an over-under that we're working with set at 7. Willie Taggart appeared to me as a man that has been humbled by a 5-7 season. He showed up and he acknowledged that there were a lot of mistakes made. He acknowledged that he learned a lot and that there was maybe a lot more in the Florida State head coaching job that was just going to come with time. And we've talked a good bit about Taggart throughout this time. So as it comes to looking at the schedule and trying to count up the potential wins with a over-under of 7, where are you sitting?
And by the way, this is another kind of anonymous team, which adds to this, at least for me, perception, because Florida State suddenly, like, it's just this mishmash of underachieving 4-stars.
Right.
Like, you can't tell the one from the other. They're all just kind of collectively underachieving. And you remember the names, but at this point, you don't know who's trending up. You don't know who's trending down. They're just kind of all in there putting together 5-7 seasons, or at least they did last year. So I think this is for that reason, like, this is a really tough team to pick. I mean, does Willie Taggart turn the corner? I do think that Kendall Briles is right there along with Graham Harrell as maybe one of the most important hires of the offseason, and maybe Randy Clements as well, the offensive line coach. Can they just get a competent offensive line? That's the real question. I mean, Landon Dickerson, who's been injured and but it was supposed to be a starter. He transfers out to Alabama. You know, supposedly their best returning player, Cole Minshew, is, you know, he's hopefully healthy, but he had like neck surgery this offseason. You know, they're leaning on a Northern Illinois grad transfer who was this sort of exciting commitment, and he wasn't first, second, or third team all MAC. So is he really going to be some savior on the offensive line? Like, there's just – so if their offensive line is competent and if they are able to get in the way a little bit, then, you know, give the Broyles to Randy Clements or Art Briles. Kendall Briles. Because I mean, that's quite an accomplishment. But that's all. But you know, in the system they're running, like maybe that's all they need is just a little bit of you know, just a lack of ineptitude. And if they can pull that off, then this could be a pretty good team. Because I do think that, you know, they've got really good players on the defensive line. Their secondary wasn't great last year, but they're
so talented.
They're really talented.
God,
I mean,
God,
they're really talented in the secondary. And so I've got them. What'd you say the number is? 7.5?
Seven.
I mean, I've got them over. I've actually got them at 8-4. 7-5 seems reasonable too. If it's 6-6, then that's a bad look for Willie Taggart.
I'm doing it. I'm biting on it. I think I've got Florida State at 9-3.
Wow.
I'm jumping on the other side of this the same way I think I'm jumping on the other side of USC, where I'm just like, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold on a second, guys. Hold on a second. Are we sure that this is all just like already failed? It's going to crash and burn. Like it's the mistake, like the wrong guy was already picked and nothing is going to be fixed or improve at all until you get someone else in there. Like Clay Helton's been at USC for much longer, but it's that same just premise of you just look down and you think, well, you know, if it's all doom and gloom in terms of the narrative and you're trying to look for some value and you're trying to maybe have a contrarian play, I love the idea that Florida State might be a contrarian play. So, you know, at 7, I'm over. At 7.5, I'd be over. At 8, I'd be over. 8.5, I'd probably back off because I don't have the push in there. But I'm thinking this is a 9-3, 8-4 type season for Florida State, and that we are reminded that Cam Akers is just like an elite level athlete who can be a difference maker in college football in the same way that Devin Singletary became one of the most prolific backs in the country at FAU with Kendall Briles as the offensive coordinator and play caller. And in the same way that FAU's offense wasn't exactly as explosive and high-powered after he left, I'm going to think that he brings a lot of opportunity for Florida State to cause problems. You know, I think that the Boise State game's a win. You go ULM. I think Louisville, NC State. I think they beat Miami. I just think that this is going to be a time where a little bit of a gut check moment for a Seminoles team that thought it had already seen rock bottom, and then 2018 revealed that they still needed to go further down.
Yeah. Where do you see, like, you've got them losing to Clemson?
Yeah.
Do you have them losing at Florida?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
And there's some rivalry spice in that, you know?
Sure.
I think here's my danger spots for Florida State. At Virginia, September 14th, October 12th, at Clemson, Syracuse at home, October 26th, Miami, November 2nd, at Florida. So I've got 5 games there as potential losses, and I'm saying they can go 2-3 in those 5 games.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, I mean, I've got them 1-3. What is it? I've got them 2-3 in those games. But I also have them like losing at BC. You know, I think they're still, I don't think they're the type of team you're just going to trust to win all the games they're supposed to win either yet. Like, that's not where I am anyways. But look, they're talented enough to get to 9-3. There's no question they're talented enough to get to 9-3. You trust them a little more than I do, but not a lot. I still got them 8-4. So this will be, we'll see how right or wrong we are.
Count them up.
Dave Clawson and the Wake Forest Demon Deacons are feeling themselves right now. They got brand new facilities. You know, they got all these bowl wins that they're starting to stack up. I mean, there is a confidence coming from Winston-Salem in the football program that you would not normally associate with Wake Forest football, but Dave Clawson has injected it. He's got a couple different quarterbacks, whether it's Jamie Newman or whether it's Sam Hartman. Both of them played last year. Both of them won last year. Cade Carney coming back is just a short
Let's just say a compact bulldozer of a running back. You know, Sage Surratt going into his sophomore year. I think the offense can be pretty good. You got some challenges on the defensive side with some key players to replace. Over under win total, as we're looking at it right now, set at 7. Don't forget that non-con against UNC. That's a non-con. How are you looking at the Demon Deacons?
Well, I've got them starting. Let's see. You said the number is at 7.
Yeah.
Well, I've got them 6-0 to start. So,
And you might as well extend that to 7 because after Wakey leaks, I don't think Dave Clawson's ever losing to Louisville.
No, I've got, because that's Louisville's game 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, you're right.
And then they got Florida State. That's where, so I think they're 6-1. They push by November 2nd with NC State coming home. And then they win one of their last 4. So I've got them at 8. Let's see. What is this, year 6 for Clawson?
Yeah.
So it was 3-9. 3-9. It was 6-6 to 7-6. It was 7-5 to 8-5. And then last year was, you know, we always like to talk about the steady climb of a Dave Clawson team. Last year was supposed to be 9-3, right? Or at least 8-4, I guess. And they took a step back. They had some injuries, changed D coordinators. I think they really found somebody that they like in Lyle Hemphill, a defensive coordinator. And I think that they kind of get back to that 8-4 year they were supposed to have last year. So I'm going 8-4 with all these redshirt freshmen, now redshirt juniors, like all this program building, all this improved recruiting. And they do that staff, I think, does one of the better jobs of evaluating and finding guys. I'm just betting on this Wake team to be the type of squad. And they got 2 competent quarterbacks returning now. I like them at 8-4.
Over. Absolutely over. And this is another one where I can't set – I do feel like I am putting a ceiling on Wake Forest, but I cannot drive home how confident I feel about a 7 or 8 win season as opposed to a 6 win season. And I love Dave Clawson's talking about the transfer portal and, you know, the transfer culture. He said, I might mess up the number, but I'm definitely close. He said, we had 11 guys who are going to be 5th-year seniors who all had the opportunity, according to the new rules, to go and transfer somewhere else to play for their final year of eligibility as graduate transfers, and every single one of them decided to stick around at Wake for their final year. Like, they truly have driven in this everyone redshirts, we slowly build this thing up. Here's the pipeline. And all of these players that want to play their 5th-year senior year at Wake, where they've been the entire time and not want to leave, that's some very, very impressive stuff by Clawson and the staff.
Yeah, I don't even understand. I don't want to sound like I'm an old curmudgeon, but I really don't get playing like with your squad for 4 years and your guys in your locker room and going to battle with them every day and practicing with them every day, and then 5th year comes along and you start shopping for just a little more playing time somewhere with a whole different group of guys. And I mean, circumstances are unique across the board, and obviously not every situation is just sort of as simple as that, but I do think, if generally speaking, that is that's a good reflection on the culture you built, the connection you built within your program, if everybody has that perspective and they're not sort of tempted. So yeah, I think that is a that's a good stat to point to if I'm talking about like program stability.
You brought it up on the Cover 3 podcast during the off season when you listed the schools with the most transfer portal action and the schools with the least transfer portal action, and more often than not necessarily exclusively in wins or losses, but in terms of just an anecdotal perception of program health, I remember the schools with the least amount of transfer portal action were the ones that we found ourselves being like, yeah, I think that is a healthy program.
Yeah.
And then
sure.
Lovie Smith, who builds a new roster every single year. No bueno.
Yeah.
Count them up!
The Boston College Eagles, as we head into Steve Addazio, year 7 with the Eagles. And when we were, you know, he came up as we were discussing coaches. You know, the argument for Steve Addazio is, well, you know, if you're Boston College, like, you should want the kind of steady results that Steve Addazio is able to deliver. I mean, 7 wins in 4 out of the last 5 years. They're going to bowl games. They're usually good for about maybe a game or two that's going to cause a little bit of a ripple effect throughout college football, whether it's, you know, knocking off, I guess, USC. Maybe that might have been a long – USC was back in 2014. But this team, especially with A.J. Dillon now finally healthy, there's a lot of optimism, but also just kind of comfort in knowing that the program seems to be in good hands. Our over-under win total here is set at 6.5. So how are you feeling about 7 wins, Steve, going into his 7th year?
I mean, what kind of idiot is going to pick them to go anything other than 7-5?
I'm going under.
Chip, they're 7-5.
I know.
Steve Addazio is a 7-5 coach. This is a 7-5 team. Why are you trying to go against the universe here?
Like, I need the wins.
Do you know better than the cosmic forces that align to make Steve Addazio 7-5 every year?
No, I need the wins. You know, I treat the activity with slight amount or some amount of integrity such that I know that all these can't be overs. And as I'm trying to explain why I'm so bullish on Florida State and why I'm so bullish on Wake Forest, I understand that that means that there need to be losses elsewhere. And I'm not ready to say that Boston College is going to go 5-7 or 4-8. No. But I do think it's possible that we could see this Boston College team at 6-6 at the end of the season.
Well, good luck with that, my friends. But, you know, 1 + 1 does not equal 3. I'm not going to look at black and call it red. You know, this is what it is, man. This is a 7-5 team. Once again, they have some flaws. You know, they lost a lot in the secondary, and Anthony Campanile, who was their secondary coach, has gone to Michigan and who did a phenomenal job. So, you know what? Maybe they're not as good in the secondary, but maybe A.J. Dillon is healthy this year. And with a healthy A.J. Dillon, with a beat up A.J. Dillon, that dude was still a beast last year. Their defensive line is a little bit depleted from last year. And yet, Anthony Brown probably takes a step forward. And Kobe White is ready to be a big-time receiver in that conference. And there's certainly some losses, but there's a bunch of toss-ups that they're going to figure out a way to win. And so I got them beating Virginia Tech, beating Richmond, beating Kansas, beating Rutgers, losing to Wake, beating Louisville, beating NC State, losing to Clemson, losing to Syracuse, beating Florida State, Whoa. Losing to Notre Dame, losing to Pitt.
Wow, and that's your 7-5.
That's my 7-5.
There's some big swings in that 7-5, Barton.
Isn't that how it works with Boston College though?
It is. I mean, that's what I said. Like, yes, they're gonna get somebody for sure. No Lucas Dennis, no Hamp Cheevers. You know, you lose Zach Allen. I mean, there's some real key players on that defensive side of the ball that have played a lot at a high level. And I need to afford Boston College some of the same confidence that I put on NC State, that their player development has been amazing, at least in terms of where these guys are as freshmen and not only how their bodies changed, but also just how their skill set has improved and their techniques improved, such that the NFL seems to come calling every single year to Chestnut Hill. So I need to allow myself that same chance to say, you might not know the next guy's names up, but by October you will. But, you know, again, as we're trying to choose some of these, like, I think I go Virginia Tech, where you went Boston College. I think that I've got them, the Clemson and Syracuse game are losses. I think I've got Notre Dame and Pitt as losses. I think I've got Florida State as a loss. Like, I can get to six losses pretty quickly, but because of the confidence in Steve Adazio in general, I'm not ready to say that this is definitely not a bowl team, but I will jump on the underside of 6.5.
Understandable. You know, I believe in the forces of nature. So, I mean, I'll let you go against that.
Count them up!
And now, just like the most bewildering number that we've got in our little data set here, because the ACC, again, just seems to be starkly in contrast on the win totals board and the preseason order of finish. I mean, Barton, all the praise that I put on Dino Babers and this Orange team and where I think they can be in the ACC this year, and this win total's at 5? Something's wow. Got to be wrong here, right?
I had looked at my projected wins and without looking at the win totals prior to this podcast. So I'm finding out in real time. And that 5 number is that really sent my head spinning there. Because I was sort of leaning towards a dip year. And then I find out that they're being picked 2nd in the division, and you're telling me that they're going to be really good. And I kind of read up on them, and maybe the pieces are a little better than I expected. And so now I don't know what to think, man. I've got them at 8-4. But that's sort of after I've been influenced. But to think that to pick under, you got to pick them a 4-8 kind of dip. Whew, that's a lot to ask for an under.
So even if there are potential pitfalls as you're trying to like total up the wins, November, Duke, Louisville, Wake Forest. So there are 2-3 wins right there at the end of the schedule. Like, yeah, Hugh Freeze and Liberty could be tough. Maryland, absolutely, like, could be a little bit challenging. We've seen Maryland play really well in non-conference games recently.
But, I mean, Syracuse should be favored in 4 of their first 5 games.
Right. Then Western Michigan and Holy Cross. They should, or ideally, the way that I'm adding this up, they start 4-1, they finish at worst 2-1, and look, now we're 6-2, looking at a little middle 4 of at NC State, Pitt, at Florida State, Boston College at home. All those are losable. I will grant you all of those are losable. But even if you lose all of those games in this worst case scenario that I've painted out, you're still 6-6.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This is the toughest, you know, and this is another anonymous team to me because they just got a bunch of like kind of fast outside receivers and undersized but athletic defensive players. And, you know, now they toss in Tommy DeVito, he's definitely a different quarterback than Eric Dungy. But in some ways, like, you can maybe argue that Tommy DeVito is more equipped for this offense than Eric Dungy because he's got a really big vertical arm. Like, he can – arm strength is not a problem for Tommy DeVito. Downfield throws, don't expect to be a problem. I guess, you know, we got to make sure he's accurate on those downfield throws, but he'll be able to stretch the field. You know, I mean, they've got what, Mo Neal coming back at running back, and then Abdul Adams, who's the Oklahoma transfer, who's a talented player too. I don't know. Like, I was just looking around the conference in my early, you know, fade Syracuse thoughts. I was just looking around the conference, and I just felt less I felt a little bit less secure in kind of what was coming back. I just didn't quite have as good of a sense of the roster maybe as some of these other teams. And then I got talked into them being better than that. And like now I'm a mess now, Chip.
8-4 is probably the right call. Cause
you think?
Yeah. Cause that split.
What does Vegas know though?
That they are. Here's what I think Vegas is doing. Vegas is looking at a team that in 4 out of the last 5 years has not won more than 4 games. And with all of the losses, I mean, you're only returning 6 starters on offense, 7 on defense. You are just sort of doing some mathematical calculations that are like, if you're losing this percentage of production, then we are going to assume this. And I believe that the general program development that has been going suggests a not directly linear trajectory, but it is not something where one senior class really held the entire team together, and now that they're gone, it's all going to fall apart. I just don't think that's what Dino Babers put in place.
Yeah. I mean, Dino Babers as a head coach, he left after 2 years at Eastern Illinois. He left after 2 years at Bowling Green, and this will be year 4 at Syracuse. Like, we've never really seen him have to sustain.
Correct.
And so this will be an interesting test for him. But even though I'm a good 3 wins in my projection over the win total, like, I will not be making this one of my locks, only because I don't feel like I've got a good enough handle on what this team's going to look like. But I think it's still going to be entertaining and fun, and like, that's still going to be, it's the type of team that is going to be a dangerous road trip for Florida State. It's going to be a game that Clemson takes seriously, though. So all right, I'm hooked. I'm ready to watch Dino. I'm ready to see what he can do.
If I said it at 6.5, what do you do?
I mean, I'm on the over. If you said it at 7, if the line was 7.5, and even though I'm predicting 8 right now, like, I would be tempted to take the under and just say, you know what, I just got my doubts.
Right.
But I'm not going to project 4-8. I just
right.
can't get there.
Right. If you set it at 5, then you're setting up an underplay, suggests that there is just like nothing, that they're going to lose to Liberty. They're going to lose to Maryland. Their wins are going to be Western Michigan and Holy Cross and Louisville and maybe one other. And they're going to lose all the rest of them and finish near the bottom of the ACC standings. And I don't think anybody within the Syracuse program, and I don't think any of the coaches outside of the Syracuse program in the ACC believe that we're going to be looking up at the end of the year and see the orange at the bottom of the standings.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
That's a head scratcher there, man.
How many games are going to win this fall?
And finally, we come to the Louisville Cardinals. Scott Satterfield taking over with the expectations are very much year 0. Similar to what we dealt with Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech, which also was set at 4. You were there in the building. Are you going to have, is this going to be the Barton bump? You come back from the visit and we're thinking 6-6 breakthrough season?
Well, tell me what the number is here. What am I working with?
4.
Okay. I actually sort of, so one of my Syracuse wins that I flipped after you sort of talked me into them being better than I expected was Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
So that took them from a 5-win projection for me to a 4-win projection. So I'm on a push to over hinging on where I feel like Syracuse falls into this thing. But, you know, I feel like I've talked a little about Louisville on this pod before, but I mean, I think that they're going to be more competitive than people are going to give them credit for, because last year was a ridiculous season with ridiculous circumstances, with a team that had quit on a coaching staff that had quit. And if you have talent, and Louisville doesn't have a ton of talent, but they have talent. They've got, you know, Mekhi Becton, their left tackle, is an NFL offensive lineman. They've got one of the better wide receiving groups in the ACC. They've got 10 starters coming back on a defense, and I get that it was a bad defense, but it was a defense that was coached by Brian Van Gorder. What I'm getting at is, it's when you're that bad, when your coaches are that disengaged, when you have that little connection to who is dog cussing you every day in practice, then I think it's going to be really, really easy to buy in to the next staff. So because that buy-in is going to be so, so easy to find, and because I think this new coaching staff is really good, I mean, not just from a culture standpoint, but I'm talking about you watch them play at App State. Those guys are really well coached. They're disciplined, but they're also like the scheme is good. I mean, defensively, they're active. They can be really effective with sort of smaller players. Offensively, they're going to have to figure out how to get some confidence in the quarterback and Puma Pass. But that's kind of why I feel better about them than most. And I would lean over just for the sake of the kind of picking, like, just regardless of where the wins come from, just betting that they exceed people's expectations. And if those expectations are 4, then I think they got a shot at 5.
I'm push to under, and I think it'll hinge on, like, here's the way I view it. I think that it is possible the Cards could go 3-0 against their in-state opponents. That's Eastern Kentucky, Western Kentucky, and the Wildcats. And that game, by the way, at the end of the season is in the big checkout line, Kroger Field. I think that Louisville, especially by the end of that season, you know, it's all about, you know, what are you playing for? Where's everyone at? Like that game right there, I think that could be a game where Scott Satterfield and all of the intangibles that he has brought to that program can come together, and that could be a big, big win for the Cards at the end of the season. So I think that they could go 3-0 there, but I don't feel super confident that they have more than one ACC win. I mean, so their cross divisions from the Coastal are going to be at Miami and against Virginia. Like I kind of think that's a little bit tough. In the division, I certainly have them in a power ranking discussion slotted at the bottom of the ACC Atlantic. And if I had to identify a spot where they might be able to get a win, I think it's probably against Boston College at home coming off a bye. But my inability to see more than one, maybe two, but like definitely more than one ACC win combined with a non-conference schedule that does include Notre Dame, that's where I'm like, I think 4-8 sounds perfect. And it's a 4-8 that'll be a 2-win increase from the year before and finish with a win against your rival Kentucky Wildcats. Like that can be a building block for the Cards moving forward. But to automatically slot them necessarily ahead of a Wake Forest, or to automatically slot them ahead of a Syracuse or ahead of a Florida State, I think that's a little bit more than I'm willing to do given sort of where that program was last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think 4-8, that's why I was hoping the number would be a little lower. But I mean, 4-8 with no 50-10 losses to anyone other than Clemson, would be a huge win, I would imagine.
I agree.
Think people would feel pretty content with the Scott Satterfield hire at 4-8 and a competitive 4-8. So, I feel a little bit like I'm on. I gave out a bunch of overs here in the ACC Atlantic, but I'm telling you, I've done the work here. The numbers work out on my schedules. So maybe I've just got them going like undefeated. Like the ACC Atlantic is like undefeated in the non-conference maybe on my schedules, with the exception of Notre Dame games. Maybe that's how the numbers work, the math works. But I don't know. Maybe somehow I'm all of a sudden bullish on this 7-5 conference.
On this previously stated anonymous anonymous coast conference, the ACC.
Yeah.
Maybe you do feel a little bit better. Got the ACC going batting 1,000 in the non-con, at least on the Atlantic side. Next week, we are going to be rolling out our Big Ten win total, so make sure that you subscribe if you haven't done that already. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Barton, thank you very much.
Deserve.